He did give me a piggyback ride for only about 3.5 miles.
Just up the steep hills.
So the famous F word being flexible, that's totally huge.
That's the F word?
Is that the F word?
Let me write that down.
That's the F word, ultra running. It's flexibility.
Faith, you still have to weigh in on whether you're going to leave your pacer, but I know you pretty well by now, Faith, and I know exactly. You would leave that person without shoes if you needed it.
If her pacer was in front of her and starting to bonk, she would push him over and actually step on his back to get past him.
I would say move over.
You know, you get a newbie pacer and they don't realize they're just trying to be really helpful and they're handling stuff, you know, past the entry point or the exit point of an aid station, and they can get you disqualified because ultimately you're responsible for any action that occurs between you and your pacer.
Yeah.
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it.
What?
Thank you for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Faith Goss.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today we have Carolyn Johnson on the podcast with us. We were perusing the internet, the vast internet, and we came across an article on trailandultrarunning.com talking about pacing. And we thought, you know, we've touched on pacing here and there a little bit, but we really haven't done a whole episode based on pacing and how to be a good pacer. And all of us have either paced or hopefully paced or been paced in an ultra run. And we have had good pacers, bad pacers, and been a good pacer and been a bad pacer.
And Scott, make no mistake about it. Pacing is a fine art.
I think so.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that art today.
And hopefully I can talk about some of my good experiences with my friend Don here who paced me last year. And I owe complete credit to my finish at Western States because of Don.
We may leave out that part about muling. You can't mule as a pacer.
He did give me a piggyback ride for only about 3.5 miles.
Up the steep hills.
Sherpa.
Well, Carolyn joins us. She is a very well qualified. She's an ultra runner. She's a mom. She's an adventure athlete. She's a speaker. And more importantly, she's a running coach. And she lives between Texas and LA. That doesn't mean that she lives in Arizona. That means that she lives sometimes in Texas, sometimes in LA. And she started running back in ultra runs back in 2006. She did a 50 miler in early May and thought that was so much fun that she decided, let's do 100 miles in November.
It sounds a lot like our own Faith Goss, doesn't it? Who just had her first 50 miler and was itching on the keyboard looking for a longer run.
Right. We will link some of her contact information on the podcast on our website, but her website address is carolynjohnson.com. Now, Carolyn spells her name a little more unfamiliar than the regular Carolyn. It's C-A-R-I-L-Y-N Johnson.com. And she can also be found on Twitter at Carolyn Johnson. The other thing that we'll talk about, we'll also link... is she has written a book, 101 Things I Wish Someone Had Told Me Before I Ran My First Marathon. Now, you don't want to go out and buy this right now, unless you want a big, extensive library, because she's rewriting the second edition, and it should be out here, Carolyn, in 2 weeks, did you say?
Yeah, probably mid-June, probably about 3 weeks.
June of 2012, for all of those reaching back in the archives and they're waiting for June of 2013. It's already out.
In addition, I do have to say that Carolyn's also an elite athlete, if you will. She's a two-time member of the Team USA 24-hour team and won a silver medal in, you're going to have to help me with this one, Carolyn, Bergamo, Italy?
Yes, the U.S. team won the silver medal that year. We were very, very lucky that year. It was a great year.
Well, thanks for joining us. We're looking really forward to going over this article with you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, Carolyn, what made you write an article about pacing?
You know, well, The reason it came to mind is that I'm actually getting ready to do Western State. And so I needed to get a couple of pacers. And kind of what you said earlier, I have been a very bad pacer. And I hopefully have learned from that. And I just thought that, you know, it might be helpful for people to really kind of think about what goes on from both sides, from the pacer and the pacee. And I just thought it was a good time to sort of get that out, get my thoughts down on paper about it, because I'm getting ready to go through the experience again for the, you know, multiple times, you know, that I've needed a pacer.
Did you find your two pacers?
I did. I found two great men that are going to pace me 15 miles apiece.
Great.
Did you give them the list? Did you say, if you want to pace me, gentlemen? And you give them a quiz? Did you quiz them?
I have a full checklist for when we get there. I'm kidding.
I suggest making a written test, maybe the Scantron version, where you could just run them through quickly. And if they do not qualify and they don't get at least, where do you set the line? 80%, 90%, or full pass?
Oh, I think a perfect score. You know, you need to be the perfect pacer.
Good.
Well, you know, I want to jump right into this. And the first one actually hits home to me, because the first time that I ever paced somebody was at Western States for that first 15-mile section from Michigan Bluff down to the river. And I just went on to the Western States website and looked at the people that needed pacers, and I hooked up with this Korean gentleman out of New York. Never met him before.
A Korean gentleman from New York?
Yeah.
Did he have a New York accent?
No.
Okay.
He was more Korean than New Yorker.
Okay.
But anyway, we never even talked on the phone. We had talked via email a few times. And going into that, first of all, I had no experience as a pacer, and I had no idea what his expectations were. So the number one thing on Carolyn's article here is to ahead of time know what the runner's expectations are and get to know them and know, you know, how fast they're going to be running. What are their expectations as far as pace and finish time?
So yeah,
go ahead, Carolyn. Talk to us about that.
Well, no, I just think it's really, I think probably that's really the most important thing, because people are so different in the way they run. And, I had an experience once where I tend to be really chatty as a person. And so in my running group, I run with, you know, the same people regularly. And one of those people paced me in a race one time. And he was so used to me being really chatty that when we were racing, he just kept, you know, carrying on a conversation. And I'd been running for 70 miles before, you know, we started running together. And I tend to get really quiet when I run, when I race. And I ended up having to leave I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I left my earbuds in, even though the battery was dead on my iPod, because I just could not take any more conversation. And I thought about it afterwards. It was so unfair to him, because he was trying so hard to help me, and I just didn't have the courage to be honest and say, I really need some quiet. So I think it's important to really talk to the runner, you know, ahead of time, just to find out, hey, you may be really chatty in person, but you're a quiet runner, or vice versa.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Faith.
I was going to say, I just experienced my first race with a pacer last month, and I made a list of things, what I wanted from him and what he should expect for me. And I'm generally like you, Carolyn, I'm a chatty person, but when I run or when I'm not feeling so great, I tend to shut down. And I wrote that on the list. I said, if I'm talking, you can talk to me, but if I just tell you to be quiet, be ready for it. I'm going to be abrupt, and I'm going to tell you to just be quiet. But I like someone to hold on a one-sided conversation. I may not be talking, but they can chat at me.
And that's great. I think that's so great to tell them ahead of time, because I do think pacers, above and, you know, beyond everything else, they really, really want to help their runner. And if they don't know what your personality is like, they're going to have a hard time helping.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. You said the pacer wants to help the runner, and that's what we're there for as a pacer, is to really cater to that person. It's their day. It's their race day. And so whatever they need. You want me to talk? You want me to sing? You want me to dance? What do you need? You know, it's really there to help them complete their task and know their goal, know their expectations, and ask them. I paced Jimmy Dean Freeman this last fall, and and started with him. And I said, Jimmy, what do you want? Do you want some talking? Do you want me to be quiet? What do you need? And he says, you can start off talking. If I tell you to shut up, then you'd need to shut up. And and you know, he was like you're saying, 70 miles into a race, and he's not going to mix words. That's what he needed at that time. So needless to say, I think he had his earbuds in and didn't answer back a lot, Caroline. I think he might have done the same thing to me.
Yeah, he may not have had battery. You never know.
I know. I said, show me some light. Show me some light on that iPod. I want to see you really listening to something.
You know, along the same lines, I think that sometimes expectations change throughout the race as you're with your pacer, where maybe it was not a good day or maybe it's a really great day, and you need to make some decisions with your pacer, and that pacer needs to, I think it's better if they know you a little bit so that they can push you a little bit harder or know when to let off in that regard. But sometimes decisions need to be made.
Absolutely. I think being flexible is very, very important. Unfortunately, so often we end up in races where, you know, like Western States, for example, it's kind of out of the way, you know, getting to Auburn. So a lot of the people that are getting pacers, they don't really know them ahead of time. And so it's as great as it would be to have your friends pacing you, if you can't do that, that flexibility that you're talking about is really important, because things do change. I mean, you can feel, we all know, you can feel great at mile 62 and feel horrible at mile 63.
Yeah. Yeah. And then feel great again at mile 67.
Exactly.
Don't leave that out, Carolyn.
It always gets better.
It always can get better.
Yes.
So the famous F word, being flexible, that's totally huge.
That's the F word.
Is that the F word?
Let me write that down. That's the F word in ultra running. It's flexibility.
True. Very true.
So number two you had written down is know the rules for pacing. Most ultras have very specific rules about which aid stations you can provide help to your runner, where you can run in relation to your runner. And then I think Dawn brought up at the beginning of the podcast, some races, or I think I would say most races, have things with muling, not muling. Yeah. Dawn, why don't you tell us what muling is?
Well, it's, you know, you're not allowed to carry the gear of the runner that you're assisting. You can't carry their water bottles. You can't carry their food for them. They have to be self-sustained. I don't think the runner can carry the pacer stuff. I don't know about, I don't know if there's that rule, but you certainly can't carry and pull your guy up a hill and say, hey, grab onto my fuel belt. I'm going to drag you up this hill. That would be muling. So you can't carry gear or runners.
I'm glad you clarified that, because when I first came into ultra running and I saw muling, I thought, is that just another way of saying, don't be a jackass? No muling?
No muling.
Yeah, and I think it's important for, you know, to know those rules, because, you know, you get a newbie pacer and they don't realize, they're just trying to be really helpful and they're handing you stuff, you know, past the entry point or the exit point of an aid station, and they can get you disqualified because ultimately you're responsible for any action that occurs between you and your pacer. So it's really important, if you're pacing someone, that you really know what are the rules for pacing. And what are the rules for the race?
Right. And I know these are written down on most websites. Like for AR50, the race that I used a pacer on, there was like a little bullet point on the side. It said, click here for like pacing. And it said no muling, but I'm not in the competitive pack. I'm not in the front of the pack. I'm a middle pack runner. And I still think that these muling laws apply to middle of the pack runners, but you know that I had my pacer muling stuff for me.
Well, wait a minute, Faith. This may no longer be an edit-free podcast. I may have to remove that.
We may have to
the fact. I'm wearing the jacket. I finished.
You know what? The jacket. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Is that she's got the medal or the belt buckle. It's all good.
You know what? The jacket police will come and take that jacket from you at night. You know that
okay,
can
in that
happen.
Case, in that case, edit that out.
Will do. Hey, now, some I've seen some races that require the pacer to be behind the lead runner. I'm not the lead runner, but the runner they're assisting. And speak to that, Caroline, if you know about it.
Well, you know, I've paced / crewed for Badwater twice. And interestingly enough, the first time I did it, you were supposed to run next to your runner because it was sort of a safety issue. They wanted you right next to your runner. And I ran with sort of a middle of the pack runner at that point. And we were, you know, nobody was really completely sure of how it went. It was the first time for him. A lot of his crew was new. And so we did a lot of sort of shuffling around. But the next time I crewed or paced for somebody at Badwater, I actually paced Phil McCarthy, who I'm sure you know Phil. He's a, you know, a very elite runner. And at that point, the rules had changed, and you were required to run behind your runner at all times. And when someone's running at that level and they're running so quickly and really pushing, it's actually difficult to stay behind them simply from a standpoint of there's a lot more things that have to be taken care of a lot more quickly. So the change in rules was really affected how we paced and how we crewed for Phil. So I do think it makes a difference, and each race, you know, changes year by year. So don't just assume that just because Western States allowed something one year that they're going to allow it the next. Always check and make sure you know where you need to be running and what kind of aid you can provide.
Well, you segue right into number three on your list, which reads, know the rules of the race, that those race rules apply not only to runners, but to the pacers.
Yes.
And you mentioned littering. Mm. That's, you know, you're out there and you're throwing your goo tabs around and leaving soup cups a quarter mile down the road. Those are things that we're not supposed to do, and that apply to both pacer and runner.
So I have a question for you, real quick, on the littering thing. Uh-huh. There's no muling, but is it okay if you as a pacer to carry the trash of your runner?
You're starting to, you know, I think that there's a little bit of leeway somewhere.
I would have to say yes.
I've never seen fingerprint investigation going on at an aid station. And as soon as they have that, then I will stick to. But Scott, if I'm running 100 miles, you might be carrying my empty soup cup to the next aid station.
That's what I'm thinking.
Go ahead, Carolyn. We cut you off.
No. Yeah, I was just agreeing with you. I think that anybody can pick up anybody's trash. And the reason I use that example in that bullet point was that it's become a big deal recently, especially when people transition from marathoning to ultra running. They're very used to being able to just toss cups and orange rinds or whatever. But ultra running has become very strict because so many of these races are happening on, you know, in state parks, national parks. Littering is just not tolerated at all. There's really a zero tolerance policy. And so the pacers really need to know, if they're new to the sport and they're transitioning in, that you can't drop anything. And if your runner drops something, I think it's okay to pick it up. I think anybody on the trail can pick up trash for someone else. Let's just not throw it down and we won't have the problem.
I think we've mentioned on a previous podcast that if you pick up someone else's trash, that gives you a free minute on your time.
Well, positive mojo that translates to a minute. Yeah, you know, the race director won't if you'd like, you bring in a bunch of rappers and then they credit you 5 points. You know, this guy came in 27 hours, but because of all of his trash, he's a sub 24 hour finisher. Not going to work, Scott. The guy's carrying a glad garbage bag.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
So let's hop into the next one.
Wait, I want to have a question about rinds. How do you say it? Rinds?
R-I-N-D?
Yeah, rinds.
Orange rinds.
Okay. Yeah, we can't throw those deep into... that seems kind of like a biodegradable thing.
Way off the trail?
I don't know. All right, I'm sure...
I wouldn't risk it.
Don't risk it?
I wouldn't risk it in a race, you know, because I just think getting disqualified and then having to debate whether or not, you know, that counts as litter.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go there. I would just pick it up. And then if someone wants to mulch it, then that's great.
I'll just eat it. There's got to be something good
There's got to be some nutritional value in that, Ryan.
That's right.
I think we kind of touched on this, but number four on Carolyn's list is have thick skin. As a pacer, you need to realize that your runner has been through hell and back, and they may be grumpy. They may be very fun to be with, but you may get yelled at. You may get snapped at by your runner, and you need to just realize that they're, you know, your runner's been through a lot that day. Carolyn?
Yeah, I think it's funny because I, you know, some of the things I've, you know, thought about after a run and you know, wish that I had done differently. It's hard, you know, it's really hard to stay completely pleasant over 100 miles. And I think if we can remember that, both as the runner and as the pacer, none of it's personal, and you will get snapped at. I can't think of a time I've paced somebody that they have not snapped at me, which may say something about me But hopefully it's just that they were really, really tired. But I think if you can remember that going in, it makes the whole thing a little less personal.
Aside from yelling, what about crying? I know there's some crying that goes on out there too. Pouting, if you will.
A lot of crying. You know, I've had people throwing up. I've seen it all. I've done it all. And you just have to sort of go through it and keep moving forward and not take any of it too personally.
Go ahead, Paige.
If it's on that list, we talked about number one, talk to your runner ahead of time to establish the expectations. Is it okay if they cry then?
You know what, Faith, I think it's okay if you cry at any given point. If you're out there running an ultra, you can cry whenever you want is kind of my theory.
Yeah, it's my party and I can cry when I want to and I cry.
Exactly.
You know, I had an experience when I was being paced by my friend Don here at Western States. You know, Don doesn't like whiners. And you know, I was having a tough time and there was a lot of whining coming from my end, and he would, you know, he was very patient with me. He didn't, you know, slap me or anything. He probably should have.
You expected me. What kind of guy are you painting me out to be, Scott?
But my point is he was very patient and listening to my whining for quite a few hours.
My earbuds were in, Scott. You didn't notice?
Oh, let's see. Anybody else on thick skin and other comments on thick skin?
Thick skin. You know, yeah. I mean, I just don't think we want to leave thick skin yet. I don't have anything, but I just think we just need to hit thick skin.
Well, Don, you may have to be flexible.
Which is number five.
Which is the F word.
Yeah, which is the F word.
I'm not ready to leave thick skin. I'm going to talk about thick skin for a second. Thick skin, you know, you can't take anything personal on a run. You cannot take comments. You may even, you know who it can't have, you know who has to, I've got it now. You know who has to have thick skin? Your runner. The runner has to have a little thick skin too. It's got to go both ways. Because sometimes a pacer has to put a La Sportiva or a Patagonia shoe up the rear of your runner. And so that there's some thick skin for you. Okay.
let's move on.
Who's editing this? I hope that I take that out.
Let's move on. You're number five.
I'm number five.
Oh, go ahead, Faith. Sorry.
She'll cry.
Go ahead,
Faith.
Skip me. Hey. Okay, number five is be adaptable, which is kind of like the F word, be flexible. Your runner may be very talkative and outgoing off the course. That doesn't mean that she or he will be like that at mile 70. So that's, I think, what we talked about earlier is that, you know, your race could be totally different at 62 miles versus 63. And what Don said was also at mile 67.
Yes, I definitely think it's, you know, I think ultra running in general and pacing specifically is really about adaptability, because it changes. Everything changes, you know, not necessarily so quickly, but it is definitely destined to change throughout a race. And I think a good pacer really knows that ahead of time and sort of goes with the flow of what's happening for the runner.
That's a good point. And I'm going to pause for a second, Carolyn. You're about to do a 100-mile race, and you've done them in the past, and you've done 24-hour runs. And I just got to ask, why do you do this stuff? Why do you run 100 miles?
You know, I get asked that a lot, and I wish I had, like, this really great, you know, answer. I really just love to run. I mean, I love to run. I love to swim. I just like to do anything that I can put a challenge in front of myself and try to you know, meet that challenge. And so it started out with the 24-hour running, and then now, you know, I'm trying to do a little trail running before I am no longer able to do it. So I just love to be out there. I just love to be out there doing it.
I actually ask people why they do this so I can get my own reason, because I don't have it. I'm running until I figure out my reason. That's right. What I'm doing, because I don't have it yet.
Well, you know, there's always another finish line. There's always a longer race. There's always a new adventure. I don't know. It seems like, you know, you finish something and then, oh, look, I could try that one. Maybe I wonder if I could do that. To me, that is what makes it so exciting.
So good point. Now, with this 100-mile race coming up and your experience in the past, and then we'll leave our little tangent here and get back to the list. How many times during that 100-mile race do you expect to go through some drama? You know, some tough times, some working through times.
You know, I kind of always tend to go through drama at every sort of milestone. So 50 miles, 75 miles, 100 miles, you know, for me, those are kind of those places where you can tell yourself, okay, I did that, I can stop, you know, and you have to talk yourself out of stopping.
So there isn't a place during the race that, and I, for me, I can never predict where they're going to happen, where a low spot is going to happen. And that's what I'm talking about when I said the drama. And I know that we usually don't use that word drama. It just kind of came up that during a race, you have some real low spots where it's either, you know, fatigue, pain, something's happening, some negative talk in your head. And those occur during a 100-mile event. Do you have a number of times that you expect those to happen and work through? Do you pre-expect them? When they're there, you greet them and you say, I knew you were showing up and now I'm ready for you to leave. Do you see that type of thing happening?
Yeah, I pretty much consistently will always have it. Like, I don't know if it's because I think, you know, pretty much inside the box most of the time, but really and truly, if I know like a big mile marker's coming and I think I can tell myself, oh, I did 50, I can stop now, that seems to really put me in a low. And it is hard for me each sort of big chunk of miles to get back out on the trail. Huh. And it seems to coincide physically. So I know there's some kind of physical, mental connection there because I really do hit them almost always at the same time.
Ooh, I want you to keep that box over on your side. I don't want that one. I've got my own problems over here, Carolyn.
Yeah, I know. We need to keep all of the problems separate. We don't want to inherit somebody else's.
Yeah.
I would say this would be a good opportunity for an advantage for your pacer to know the course so they can kind of expect when those pitfalls or those bad places might be coming, like, you know, right before a big climb or, you know, right after a busy aid station where you get to see your family, that your runner may not be feeling as great or your runner will feel good at that point. So that's the advantage I would say for your pacer, really knowing the course, is when to expect those not so good times and to be adaptable and flexible in those periods of time.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point. I mean, I think if your pacer, if you can, you know, connect with your pacer and let them know that would be fantastic for the pacer.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Faith. You know, if you know there's a nice downhill section coming up and you can just let your runner know, hey, you know, there's that great spot where we run for 2.5 miles and it feels like it's free. You're really going to feel a lot better. You're going to catch up. It's cool through there. There's some tree coverage. There's that creek. We're going to splash some water on and you're going to come out of there feeling so much better. That's the kind of dialogue that's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Faith, I need a pacer coming up. I like what you're saying. Number six, I'm supposed to read six. Oh, I'm going on another tangent about crew, okay? Because crew is kind of an extension of a pacer. It's kind of like the pacer family, right?
Yes.
And they're important too. Did you want to comment anything on crew? Scott's over there waiting to speak. Did you?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I think that crew is important because you know, I think at those aid stations, you're coming in and you need a cheerleading section.
Yeah.
You know, your pacer can, and I guess sometimes needs to be a cheerleader, but that's where your crew comes in. You know, they're the ones that can look you in the eye when you're coming in and saying you look great, even though you look like you...
The opposite of great.
The opposite of great. and just tell you that you're doing a great job and keep on going and we're rooting for you. I think that the crew is very important in that regard.
And people adopt other runners that may be crewless at that point.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Good. Yeah, you're okay you're okay to adopt another runner into your crew family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Aid station workers are usually very apt to step in there, aren't they?
Right.
Well, and more than likely, your crew is going to be really people that you know well, your family, your close friends, and your pacer may be, up until that moment, kind of a stranger. So I think crew can be a huge bonus in that connection, but with you and your pacer, you know, because hopefully they're not so fatigued or so, you know, ill or whatever is happening to you that, you know, I think the crew can actually help your pacer handle you better because they know you. So I think crew and pacer really goes together. And a lot of times your pacer may come from your crew.
Yeah, so sometimes when the pacer falls off, you've got to recruit somebody from the crew real quick.
Yep.
Do you wear a size 10 and a half?
I think that happens a lot.
Number six, and I like six. I think we should put this in bold because this is a good one. This, we have to remember as the pacer, this is not your race. That I have seen pacers or experienced that you know, you have 50 miles on your legs and the pacer comes in so excited for you, ready to go, and they're ready to run your normal training route pace, you know, because you may have run with them in the past and you run an X minute mile. They're going to jump in with X minute ready to go. But you have a tired runner. You have to adapt and identify just how they're running and make sure that you're not pushing them too hard, because you can bury your runner. Your runner might be so excited to see you that they're going to keep up with you and chat away and show you how well they're doing. And the next thing you know, 2 miles later, you just ran through what they had left, and you can't do that to your runner. Well, yeah. I took all your story there, Carolyn. Add to it.
No, that was perfect. That's exactly right. The way you said it was perfect. You know, I think it's just sometimes pacers go into these events. They basically taper for them because they want to be fresh and helpful, and their intentions are so good. Unfortunately, sometimes they're so worried about their 30-mile run that they forget that, you know, you may not make it fully. You may be walking by the time they see you. And so, you know, it's just important for the pacer, and I've been guilty of this myself, to remember it's about the runner and about helping them be successful in this race and not about whether or not you get your run.
You know, there's a lot of things that correspond and I think dovetail off of number six that are later in the list, so we'll get to those. But number seven is take care of yourself. You know, you can take it to an extreme where the only person you're worried about is the runner, and you go into an aid station and making sure that your racer gets all the nutrition and full of electrolytes and filled their water bottles, and you're not taking care of yourself. Well, you need to take care of yourself so that you can help your runner, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, bad water was a big learning lesson for me, because the first time, because I saw we had a larger crew than the second time when I helped Phil. And, you know, even with the larger crew, people weren't getting enough rest. You know, it's so hot. You're trying to be so helpful. And if you have a runner that's out there a longer time, you can be out there for a really long time. And I just think you can't be helpful to your runner if you are so fatigued or, you know, you bonk. I mean, having a bonked pacer is you know, you don't want to be dragging your pacer in. And I've seen it. I've seen it where the runner is actually having to give aid to the pacer because the pacer just, you know, didn't think about how much carb intake they were, you know, they just weren't thinking through that they're out there running 30 miles too. So I think really as a pacer, you got to pay attention to that and monitor what you're doing just as if you were racing.
And this goes against kind of the trail runner ethics or morals. But if you're running a race and your pacer can't hack it, you need to drop them. And that kind of goes against, you know, we as trail runners like to help our fellow runners. But you got to remember that if your pacer for some reason bonks or is having problems, it is your race, and it's okay to drop.
Now that's your opinion, Scott. I happen to agree with it. But
think there's some that don't?
I imagine there are some runners out there that want to, you know, take their pacer with them and would sacrifice their time for it. I think that's okay if that's your position. But I happen to expect you to drop me if you're running off and having your day, and I would feel bad that I didn't support you.
Well, let's just say this: it's okay. We're giving the community the permission that's okay to drop your pacer, right?
Well, let's get Carolyn's thought on that, and Faith's too, because we've weighed in over here on our side. We're pretty ruthless, apparently. Let's see if the ladies have any more compassion.
Well, I'm actually over here laughing because my I don't remember if it was my second or third. Anyway, at some point I ran Umstead, and I was a fairly new runner, but I knew enough to know better, but. My husband was actually pacing me, and it was the end of the race. It was probably mile 98, and he, you know, he wasn't a big runner. He ran marathons, but, you know, hadn't run a lot, and he was my only pacer for the race, so he'd run quite a bit. And it was, you know, middle of the night, and we got to, I think, 98, and I just wanted to get in. I just wanted to get in, and I was running as fast as I could, and he kept saying, "You're going too fast." I said, "This is a race." And he goes, "Well, don't leave me." And I go, "This is a race." And I took off and I left him in the middle of the forest by himself, and he got lost.
Oh, no.
Yes. And we've been married 21 years, and he brings it up every race I do that I left him in the forest. He got lost. So I have to agree that I do leave people. But I think that maybe if you talk about that ahead of time, maybe I should have discussed it with him, and it would have been better. But we stayed married.
Well, that's good.
Man, I think you could do a whole podcast on whether or not your spouse is a good pacing partner.
Oh, I just wrote that. I just wrote that down for a little discussion here. I think this is a good place for it, too, so we can at least scratch the surface. Now, what about this? What if, and Faith, you still have to weigh in on whether you're going to leave your pacer, but I know you pretty well by now, Faith, and I know exactly. You would leave that person without shoes if you needed it.
If her pacer was in front of her and starting to bonk, she would push him over and actually step on his back to get past him.
She would.
I would say, move over.
That's right. So we know
I'm
where you're going.
Strain.
Now, but to the point. Now, what if the pacer is bonking and there's some safety issues? Now, I mean, that puts a whole new mix in it, because sometimes if you leave that person, maybe they're cramping and maybe they have some serious, you know, health issues going on. Then I think, is the race more important or your friend's health?
It's 3 o'clock in the morning, dark.
Let me see. Is it a good friend?
Are you going to have to run with them next week?
I don't know. I think that you make sure that you take care of people's health first.
I'd casually drop them off at the next aid station, and I'd say thank you, and then I'd go.
Well, that's nice. Now, earlier you talked about 30 miles, running 30 miles and people preparing for it. And so you calculate what 30 miles will take in your experience. But we have to remember two things. One, this isn't a normal 30 miles. This may be 30 miles over the normal period of time plus another 4 or 5 hours. I mean, you could be out there a long time, which means you need more fluid than you're used to. You need more fuel than you're used to. You need to expect to be out there more time than you're used to. So sometimes it's easier to run 30 miles at a faster pace than going low and slow for a long time with dragging somebody along, both physically and mentally with some of the grind. So really prep yourself and make sure you hydrate well and carry enough fuel for yourself, because it's not a normal 30 miles.
Moving on to number 8 is, I think we've totally hit on this before, but know your runner's racing preference. Does he or she like you in the front or behind? And of course, we need to check the rules that apply to a specific race. And do they like to be pushed or completely in control of the pace? And I think that's something that I know in my experience with this last race, I wrote that down and I told him straight to his face, I need someone to pull me. So I'm a puller. I need to be pulled.
Yeah. And I think if people, you know, really prefer, you know, one way or the other, again, you know, depending on the race and the rules, I like to run behind people also, except when I want to go faster or I'm really struggling and I, you know, feel like they're pushing me if they're behind me, sort of on me the whole time. So sometimes I change, you know, but generally I'm with you, Faith. I like to be behind. I like to have them sort of where I don't have to think about where I'm going. I really can just focus on the back of their feet and let them guide me.
Yeah, and a good pacer needs to really key into the effort of the person behind them, listening to their breath. You know, how hard is it for them to work coming up this hill? Does it sound like their rate of respiration is increasing or labored now? So then you back off and really try to tune in to their footsteps and listening to when it's hard and try to stop. It's a real art out there if you really take it seriously. You're just not running with them and keeping them company. You're supposed to be tuning into their physiology and just being there, figuring them out and helping them along.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I talk to coaching clients that are getting ready to pace for the first time, what we really go through, I mean, we go through kind of the checklist, but we really mostly talk about it's kind of trying to get in sync with that person. And that means from the beginning through the end. And if you can sort of really, really, really pay attention to what's happening to your runner, it's just going to be such a better experience for both of you. And I think your point about listening to respiration rates, are they struggling? Did they just quit talking all of a sudden? You know, that may be just part of what they need to do at the moment. But I think it's a good time to sort of, you know, hey, is everything good back there? because they really could need something and just can't verbalize it at that point.
You know, I think that transitions us into number nine very well. And I want to take this one because I have some anecdotal stories here. Number nine is keep taking your runner's pulse. And that's not necessarily literally taking the pulse, but being, like Don was saying, being aware of labored breath. Where is the runner mentally and physically? And I have to say that, you know, as a pacer, you're there also to be a motivator and to push the runner if they want it. You have to know their expectations, but to push the runner. And I think we've talked about this a little bit on our podcast, but one thing that Don did with me at Western States was he knew that I needed more calories, and nothing at the aid stations were really looking very tasty there near the end. And so he made a deal with me. He said, as long as you're eating something, you can walk. So he would load me up at the aid stations with two handfuls full of stuff. And as long as I was eating, I could walk. And that was his way of motivating me to eat more. And it actually worked.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. That I think I'm going to steal that. I think that's a very good pacing strategy. You're a good pacer.
He is a great pacer. You know, on the flip side, you know, near the end of the race, being able to, you know, say, okay, you know, as a pacer saying, you know, between here and there, you know, up to the next tree, we're going to run, and then we can walk for 15 steps or something like that. And being a good motivator, but you need to be aware of where the runner is mentally, emotionally, and physically so that you know how far to push them without pushing them over.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause some runners, you know, depending on where they are in their sort of running career, some runners really get irritated if you push them because they have a very defined plan of what they want. And then other runners, you know, are just sort of going into it with a wing and a prayer, and you really kind of have to take charge and do exactly what you did. And, you know, if you will eat something, you can walk. I just think that's so smart.
Another thing that when you know that, you know, one thing, a couple things, you know, the Garmin watch, and I'll just say GPS watches, but the Garmin, I really enjoy that watch, that there is nothing better than to know what the distance is from one aid station to the next. A good pacer should have that on a pace chart.
Yes.
They should know that it's 6.2 miles to the next aid station, because that's even if you don't know the trail, as long as you know distance, you're in pretty good shape. Like, we're halfway there. Now, that's something I would never share with the runner I'm pacing unless they're asking for it. I may put it in there if it would surprise them that we're just, you know, 3/4 of a mile from an aid station. We've had a pretty good stretch. I'd say, hey, you know, we'll be at the aid station in no time. We're 3/4 miles of the way out. But it sure is nice for your runner to look back and say, man, how far have we gone? They know it's 6.2 miles and you've only gone 1.2. You know you're in trouble with your runner. He's got some work to do.
So do you lie?
No,
do
you never lie. No, you cannot
never
lie.
Lie.
You never lie, never exaggerate, never anything. You've got to be honest. But what a great tool that is to have them be able to look back to you and say, hey, where are we at? How much further? Because I run in the long stuff, aid station towards the end. You know, I 6.2 and I have 4 more of those to go. Okay, good. I can handle that. That's how I break it down. So my pacer having tactical information is huge.
And I think it's smart, like you said, to have your pacer know it and then let the runner decide what, you know, he or she wants to know. You know, sometimes they don't want to know it all. I never want to know mileage until I hit mile 70, period. I just, it makes me crazy to think, oh my gosh, I'm at mile 30. You know, I just don't want to know. But I do want to know later, like you said, so I can start ticking those miles off in my head.
Yeah, so at some point it becomes an advantage when you know the miles. It hits. There's a tipping point, and for you, it's around mile 70.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
so I have a question for you. You know, along taking the pulse of your runner, how do I say this? I think it is bad form, or probably more annoying. Probably that's the word, annoying. It's annoying for you as a pacer to continually ask, how are you doing? How are you feeling? How's your knee? I know your knee has been hurting. How's your knee doing? And keeping them focused on the negative. I think that as a pacer, to take their pulse, you need to do nonverbal observations rather than saying, hey, you know, you've had a problem with your hip for the last 2 months. Has that hip been bothering you? Do you feel the pain shooting up through your spine? Does that hurt?
on the other side of that, Scott, I mean, you just do the flip side of that. And who hasn't experienced this? So everybody chime in, because I think we all have. When a pacer says, hey, that was a great stretch we just ran. You know, when you've had a positive, good stretch that you've run, that was good work, that was good work. That was just positive comments go a long, long ways.
Totally. I think affirming your runner is just invaluable. That's great. I like when, you looked really strong coming into that aid station. You know, I really like positive affirmations when I'm running. I like them outside the trail too, but I'm just saying.
We're working on it, Faith. Every time I see it, I tell you something nice.
I think I'm going to start calling her Stuart Smalley.
The another thing that when I don't even know what number we should be places went in. If it doesn't fit in a number, we'll call it a tangent, okay?
0.5.
So the water bottles, you know, it's so important to stay hydrated. What's the number? I have to try to remember. When you drop 4% of your hydration level, your performance drops 11%, something like that. I mean, it's huge. It's so important to make sure that you're able to stay hydrated. And to have your runner to let them know, hey, our goal over this next aid station is empty both of those bottles. That's our goal. Yep. Let's just work towards that. And you're running through there, you're watching them, you're noticing how much they're drinking. Either you're listening or you're seeing their bottles. And so you can help remind them, hey, let's keep the water going in. That's fine. That's not harassing, because remember, the goal is emptying bottles and making sure that they realize that empty bottles mean better performing body, which means easier time out here. And so tie it all together so that you give purpose to it. And then all of a sudden, the run starts to take on different things. Now I'm working on drinking bottles and not just thinking about my feet. So, you know, those are some of the ultra, those are ultra tricks, Scott.
They are.
Well, I think that's such a good way to look at it, because it really, you know, overall, I mean, if you could look at sort of this in a big package, your goal is to ease the burden for the runner. I mean, to keep them safe, obviously, and to ease the burden of the runner. And so if you're telling me, if we have a 6-mile stretch, but it's, you know, very technical and it's going to take us a while and I need to get through 2 bottles and you handle the thinking about that for me, I love you forever, because that's one less thing I have to think about.
Right. I like it. Well, we're going to meet you out there at Western States, because we're going to be out there hanging around being crews or something. So we'll get a chance to see you.
We may be pacing.
I'm
hoping.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. We're and on
available.
That.
Any listeners, we're available. We can pace.
And then on that same level for number 10, be trained. As a pacer, you need to be able to run those distances that your runner is asking you to do, 15, 30 miles, whatever it is you have to be in shape to hold your runner together as well.
There's nothing more humiliating than being dropped by your runner. I know.
Yeah, and I think it's really, you know, helpful if you kind of think about it ahead of time of, I may be pacing, but it gives you something to train for. And you know, you don't want to be, because you are having to worry about, are they getting enough fluids? Are they drinking those 2 bottles? Are they getting enough calories? You know, am I pushing? Am I not pushing? When you have to take on all that stuff and take care of yourself, the level of training you need to pace, sometimes people think, you know, big deal, they're going to be going so slow, it doesn't matter. But it matters, because you have to run and have all your marbles. You know what I mean? You got to keep it all together. And that takes a lot.
Is that what you keep inside of your training pack there, marbles? I wonder what was in those things.
Yeah, I add that little extra bit of weight for the hill training.
Good, good. Hey, so I have an additional one here that I think is important, and that is helping your pacer prior to the aid station. Okay, we have an aid station coming up.
Helping your runner or your pacer?
No, helping your runner. You are the...
Pacer.
You're the pacer.
Okay.
You're with a runner.
Okay.
And so you start the dialogue. Hey, we have the aid station coming up. What are you thinking about? What do you think sounds good? Getting them to start thinking about what foods might... You don't want them sitting there at the aid station table kind of looking around.
You got
to
get them in and out.
Efficient aid stations are important for goals. And having them stand around too long may make them think that standing is better than running. So you want to have them efficient. But to make sure that they can start listening to what their body's asking for. I'm thinking something salty sounds good. Something wet and sweet sounds good. You know, those types of things. And just, you know what our aid stations, it's the standard fare, but get them thinking about it.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, your runner needs, you know, extra things that may not, if you have to wait till you get to the aid station, it's going to be a problem. You know, I paced someone at Javelina one year, and it was very, very, very hot, and he ended up with really bad stomach problems, and we had a conversation about it, and so luckily we discussed it about 2 miles out from the aid station, and we sort of, you know, he told me what was going on, I became aware of it, and we were able to sort of figure out, by the time we got into the aid station, I knew what I needed to get to sort of, you know, bandage the problem until we got back to the main aid station where he could really get some, you know, some more significant help. So knowing that ahead of time, talking about it and devising the plan going into the aid station, we were able to handle it as opposed to having to sit him down, discuss it, what do we need to do? We were ready to take care of it right as we got in.
That's just planning ahead and just so smart to do. I know one thing that, and I don't know what, at least it wasn't in this rule book, it allowed it to happen. And I will go back to, again, to Jimmy Dean Freeman when I paced him out there. And he sent me ahead, like about a quarter of a mile before the aid station. He says, here's what I need. And he says, have him get me a chair. I need a change of socks. I need some, you know, I need to be pampered, get my foot masseuse here. I want my foot massaged. And, you know, I want to look at the daily paper. He had all the things that he wanted done. And so I delivered that to the crew. He came in like it was an Indy pit stop. He had it all done, in and out and gone. I thought, wow, that really worked.
Yeah, it does. And if a race allows that, that's fantastic. A lot of races won't allow your crew to enter before you. But if it does, that's phenomenal. Because then you really can take care of stuff. And your runner just has to run through and, you know, put their hands out, basically.
Well, one thing that I've enjoyed and I've watched it, because you need to work at aid stations too, people, because then you want to learn how what a good pacer does. Somebody, you know, volunteer at an aid station, and you'll see good pacers and you'll see the opposite of good pacers. And what I've seen that I've enjoyed people doing for me is the pacer takes care of you. You come in and he goes, he'll have this, and he'll take 2 bottles. You know, half ice, half Gatorade, half water. And it's all of a sudden like, wow, I'm the king around here. And
yes.
It helps.
And he's also your voice to the aid station to say thank you sometimes. At mile 79, the
good
runner
point.
May not have the energy or emotion to thank the aid stations like they want to. You know,
right.
They want to.
Yeah.
And so the pacer is now the puppet.
That's good, Scott. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a good point. But they're also at that for the medical aid point. Oh no, he started at 172. That's his weight. No, that's his weight.
Let him go.
He's fine. He always slurs like that. He has never had a speech pattern that anyone can recognize. Those eyes, always like that. One left, one right. It's
that's
typical.
Normal.
Yeah, he's fine. Come on, let's go. I've seen pacers drag their guys out of that thing. No, he's fine. He's kicking them along.
Oh man! You know what? Note to self: a minute ago, I thought you'd be a great pacer. Now you might just be dangerous.
You need to recant your request there.
Exactly.
I'm just saying what I've seen with people volunteering at stations. That's all. I'm still a good candidate.
Yeah.
If you have trouble with your two gentlemen, you let me know. I'll pass the test.
You know, I have to reiterate what you said, Don. I think the training ground for a good pacer is to go hang out and be an aid station worker, because you're right. You may see 200 or more pacers, and you'll see the good ones, you'll see the bad ones, and you'll say, you know, that's the kind of pacer I want, or that's the kind of pacer I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes time for you to pace or be paced, then you can, you know, communicate those expectations.
And I've seen on hot days where the runner wants to go and the pacer says, no, let's get over to this bucket of water and get some water on top of you,
yeah.
And then let's go. And that's good. There are times you need to put your foot down as a pacer and say, this only takes a second, let's do it. How many times have you left an aid station and you said, ah, man, I totally forgot to get X, Y, or Z, or mm-hmm. not even think about, oh, I'll have to do it the next time. Your pacer's there to help you out. So we need to respect our pacer. As runners, we need to give some respect to that pacer.
Yes. No, I think, you know, we couldn't, frankly, in a lot of these races, we would not be safe out there without our pacers.
Pacers out there, they help us with the trail too, and looking for ribbons, right? I know that that's a part. you get tired all day long. You've been following ribbons and looking for trail turns, etc. Boy, it's so nice to have that pacer eyes now turn to the trail and guide. And that's not muling, by the way. And have them, you know, be a little more responsible for trail navigation.
Yeah. No, I mean, and, you know, like the story, I mean, I think you all actually talked to her, Cammy, with the bear. You know, thank goodness she had someone with her. I mean, there's so many little things that can go wrong when it's dark and you're tired and you pushed your body to the edge. And it's just so great to have someone with you, either because they're managing your hydration or they're motivating you or they're keeping you safe. But it's just such an important role to have them. So thank goodness we're allowed in our sport in those, you know, certain races to have pacers, because I really think some of the things we couldn't do without them.
And I would say if for the listeners that haven't run ultras yet and are looking to get into it, sign up to be a pacer. That's probably a great way to get into ultras and get the inside look and the inside scoop on what's going out on, you know, what's going on out there on the trails.
Yes, Faith. In fact, Scott's first view of a 100-mile run, and I wanted him to see it so he would be prepared for the ugly side of a 100-mile event, was he paced me. And he got to see that, man, you know, it can get out there. And just know that's what, expect that, Scott. This is going to happen to you. So don't go into this thing thinking it's all, what is it, raindrops and cherry something? I don't even, what is that? That's not even a saying.
I have no idea.
There is a saying somewhere that it's gumdrops and roses.
I don't know. Where did you grow up?
Google. I need Google. So
ponies and rainbows.
Yeah, that's it. So there's it's good to go out there and see some of the pain, so you know what you're going to be faced with, because nobody gets away for free. It is difficult for everybody.
It is. But it's fun. It's fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah, let's drag back. Let's circle around to the fun part.
I actually want to say that, and I think that there's also a limit, but you as a pacer, I think, need to try to be a little bit entertaining. Not necessarily dancing or anything like that, unless you need to. You need to, of course, read the runner. but I think that it's good to for you to distract the runner sometimes from what they're going through. Again, I have to go back to Don. I'm at mile 97 of a race of Western States, and we're running up to Roby Point, and he says, "Hey, Scott, have you ever seen that rock up there? That's a beautiful rock. Hey, look at that rock." And of course, I'm hunched over like a
Quasimodo,
looking at my toes. I didn't look at the rock because I wasn't going to waste that energy, but it was fun because I got a good laugh out of it, and it took my mind off the pain just for a short moment.
I want to go around the table, and we're gonna start with Carolyn, okay? Because you're essentially at our virtual table where you are. Then we'll go Scott, Faith, and then back to me. And assume all these people that I'm talking about are in shape. Your spouse, totally in shape, right? Ready to go. A friend, your key co-trainer that you train with, or a complete stranger. And these are your choices that you have. But the stranger knows the course. All right. They're a veteran. They know the course. The other two, your friend, the guy you train with, or your spouse, never seen the course. Okay. So those are the choices you have for picking up as a pacer. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Carolyn, who do you pick?
You know, I pick spouse because for me, running is such a mental sport. I mean, the training, you know, once the training's in the bank, the racing part is mental. And so I do better with someone who knows me rather than knows the course. I mean, course would be fantastic, but I think the personality is more important, because I think that, you know, really what this list comes down to is really knowing the runner, not knowing them personally necessarily, but knowing what they need. And for me, that would be my spouse, because he's been at all the races.
Great answer. Scott?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think I'm going to have to go with a friend.
All right.
The person that knows you the most, that knows how you, whether you like to hike the hills, whether you like to run the hills, whether you're a downhiller or, you know, that's where I'd go.
Faith.
I would choose the veteran, because course knowledge is invaluable, but at the same time, I can pretty much talk to anybody. I can have a good time with anybody. So I would love to have my friend there. I would definitely not want my spouse pacing me, but that's a whole nother podcast. But
no, that's an appointment with the psychologist, Faith. That has nothing to do with the podcast. Go ahead.
My spouse isn't a runner, so that just doesn't work out. But anyways, yeah, I think horse knowledge is great, and I just have a good time getting to know random people in general, so I'm good with the veteran.
Don, you're the tiebreaker.
You know, because I could go with any of the three, and I guess that's everybody could. The stranger, I feel like I don't want to have him think or her think that I'm weak and a wimp, so I might just push through, right?
You're such a Marine.
and a spouse, I might really try to just have her have some sympathy and empathy for my situation.
And pride, right?
Well, she knows. My wife knows I'm weak, so I don't have to hold that up anymore. The stranger doesn't know. And a friend. I would have to say probably someone that I've trained with, because I'm going to go with you, Scott, on that one, because I think that, when things get ugly, they've probably seen the ugly, and they've helped you out of it before. So I'm going to go with
friend. Or a previous pacer, even. Someone's paced you.
What are you saying? If somebody has paced you, they can't be your friend. They could be your friend.
No. I'm saying, chase them off. If they've seen you in the ugly.
Yeah.
Sometimes in training, they don't see the ugly.
Yeah. They're all good choices, though. You wouldn't lose with any of them, and you won't lose with Caroline Johnson as a coach or as a with her new book that's coming out or new edition. You just have a lot of good trail knowledge, Caroline. It was great talking with you.
Oh, this was so much fun. I really enjoyed talking to all of you.
Well, and the best thing about Trail Runner Nation is we're not getting on this podcast and saying we know it all. Those of you who are listening, please, I'm sure that you're screaming at your earphones as you're running down the trail or driving down the road and saying, hey, what about this? What about that? Go ahead and leave your comments. Let's learn from each other. Throw your comments on the website underneath the podcast.
Well, and I think we learn, and I learn something every race where I think, oh, I wish I'd included that because that never came up before. So it's great. I think it's each race you learn something new.
I agree. Hey, Carolyn, again, we want to make sure that everybody is aware of trailultrarunning.com. Can you tell us a little bit about trailultrarunning.com and how you got involved with that group?
It's a new website that is really focused on trail and ultra running education. And, what I do for them is they syndicate my writing. They have coaching services. They have a lot of stuff going on that site. It's a great site to check out because it really is, there's just an abundance of information on that site and you're getting a lot of different points of view. You have, back of the pack runners, middle of the pack runners, front of the pack runners, you're getting it from all sides because I think it's important we kind of, get what we need when we need it, depending on the time in our careers or the type of race we're running. So it's a really good resource. It's a great group of people to work with, and it's been fun to write for them.
That's great. I would encourage you, we'll link that at the bottom of the podcast. I encourage you to go look because I've browsed around and there is some really good information. They are, they're definitely good people.
Hey, Caroline, we'd like to have you back to talk about 101 things that you wish you would have known before you'd run a marathon. I think that might apply to ultra running too.
Well, and actually, I do have the list for the ultras. If we'd rather do that one, we can do that.
I think yes.
So you just let us know when that gets released, and get in touch with us, and we'll do another follow up podcast. So, Nation members, thank you for joining us. We've really enjoyed talking about how to become a pacer. Make sure you look at the end of the podcast and check out the links for Caroline Johnson. See if you're in need of a coach. She's a very good one. Her website is carolynjohnson.com and can be followed on Twitter at Caroline Johnson.
Well, this portion of the show is the Patagonia poll. And if you've been to the website, you've had a chance to look at the polls that we do, the questions that are in and around trail running. And specifically, what we're talking about on this podcast is pacing, and what better discussion to have. When do you use a pacer? And so we put it out to the nation. We wanted to know just when do you folks require a pacer and you find it most comfortable for your race? When are they in the way? and when are they the only way?
Did we put 5K as an option in there?
No, we did not. We'd like to welcome George Plumerity from Patagonia to have not Patagonia the mountain, but Patagonia the
the company,
the company that provides great trail wear and the shoes and the great gear that's out there and so many of the shirts and things. In fact, the newest shirt coming out that we're putting out for the Trail Runner Nation shirt happens to be a Patagonia wear.
It does.
So we think it's the right gear.
And George, many people have met George because he's the brainchild behind the Patagonia Lounge at some of the past races and upcoming races.
Welcome, George, and tell us about your lounge experience.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here. The lounge was great. It went really well. It was a really good time. I think it was well received by everyone who found themselves in it. You know, we just basically had some really comfy couches and a cold beer and kind of some good vibes. So it was a good time for sure.
That's a great way to finish a race. We had 70 votes on this particular poll we put up, and we have the percentages of the people that selected what distance they would prefer to have a pacer.
What were the choices, Don?
Choices are 50K, 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile, or I never use a pacer.
So drum roll, what was the highest?
Well, we got to start to the low and work up.
Okay. No drum roll. Scratch the drum roll.
George, let's start with you. What distance do you feel would be appropriate for a pacer for you? When would you most like to have somebody join you on a run?
You know, I'm kind of the no pacer variety personally. I just feel like so much changes during the course of the race that when I've tried to have someone come in with me late into it, I usually wind up not really appreciating it. I've kind of already gotten myself into where I'm at in my head, and the last thing I want to do is like have a conversation with someone and kind of like catch them up on how my day's been. And that kind of thing.
How your day? So, what's been going on for the last 10 hours, right?
Exactly. You know, I've definitely had situations where I ran entire long runs with people, you know, and that seems to be a little different because you're all sort of sharing the experience from start to finish, you know, but suddenly getting someone to jump in when you're already cooked and really deep in the race can just feel kind of weird to me.
Well, George, you're not alone because, in fact, that was the top vote getter. That was 47% of the people said, yes, I never use a pacer. Now, that means one or two things. We have to be critical. That means maybe someone's not running more than
50K.
50K that allows for pacers. So that's one. And the other may be just like what George is saying. You know, I don't want a pacer. I've made it the first, you know, 10 hours on this. I'll make it for the next 10. I'll be fine. I want to do my own thing.
I was surprised by that. I thought that there, you know, the high number count on I don't use a pacer was much higher than I thought it would be. But I came to that conclusion. Maybe people who were voting have maybe not experienced 100K or 100 miler, and so they haven't had the need for a pacer. Although we have talked to Jeff Rose before, who's won a gazillion 100 milers, and maybe not a gazillion, I think it's a little less than that, but he's done quite well in his career, and he typically does not like to have a pacer, even on a 100 mile race.
It's hard to find somebody that fast. Hey, Faith, what distance do you prefer a pacer?
Well, considering my first 50 miler was a month ago, I used a pacer on a 50 miler. And I think, first of all, I didn't even know that there were 50Ks out there that you could use a pacer. Is my knowledge incorrect? Are there 50Ks that exist that you can use a pacer at?
There's a very small race with about 3 people in it, Faith, that we used to fill out the poll here. So you may have caught us on that one because the people, maybe we need to run these by you, Faith, before you put them up there.
I'm sure there's races out there that encourage pacers at 50K, but the key is you need to read the rules.
You know, the Patagonia poll does not limit itself to what's established out there. They maybe just say, if you wanted a pacer,
they're rule breakers.
Well, they definitely...
They just require you to be creative in your mind.
They're barrier breakers. That's our Patagonia.
Ooh, nice.
So your answer, Faith, would you do it again at 50? Let me ask you that. Would you do it again at a 50-mile race?
I would. Yeah, I would.
Would you try it without it at 50?
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe that would bring the darkness that I'm searching for.
if you run later into the night, it will certainly become dark, Faith. That's all you, that's what you need.
Is that a guarantee?
Guaranteed. Scott Warr, what distance do you prefer a pacer?
You know, I have not run 100K yet, but I would assume that for me, 100K and 100 miler, I would definitely want a pacer. 50 miler, I enjoy the company. I don't need a pacer for 50 miles. I've done both ways, and I don't need it for 50 miles.
You know, I neglected to give the percentage on the 50 mile for that.
You did neglect that.
I did. 14%. So we had, I don't use a pacer at 47, 50 mile at 14%. The lonely 50K is just a 2.86%, very small. So maybe people realize that, you know, there's not a lot of 50Ks with pacers. Maybe that's why they didn't have them. And then, Scott, your 100K, 6%. And your 100 mile, because that's what I'm going to go for, the 100 mile. Yep. I think that's
where you would put your...
That's what would have been my vote. And I did vote on this, 30% left over for 100 mile. And I've tried 100 mile without a pacer. I made a mistake not having a pacer on that one. But I still want to try it again without a pacer. I really want to go through that entire... experience.
It's a different challenge,
solo,
isn't it?
Yeah, a solo endeavor, almost like an adventure.
But not this year.
Not this year, because it's too close to my real failure, and I didn't have somebody there to help me out when I really did need it. Pacers are invaluable. So that's our.
It kind of depends on which race, though, too, right? I mean, you know, some races you've got a big enough field, and the aid stations are really tight together, and you're probably not going to be alone all that much. Even if you're not with a pacer,
you know,
you get there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm thinking,
or if you have a good crew.
How about a 24-hour track event?
Oh my god!
Definitely a pacer. George, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate the Patagonia poll. We'll have a new one up, and they'll correspond with our topics on podcast. And like to have you come in and help shoot the breeze about the poll.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Well, Trail Runner Nation members, thank you for joining us. Go on to the website, trailrunnernation.com. Join, learn, share, and get out there and run, dang it.
Hold my hand while you cut me down. It had only just begun, but now it's over now. Enjoy in the heat of moments with your heart playing up cold. I'm between the middle, watching hastiness unfold. On my eyes, you were smiling in the spotlight, dancing with the night. When I fell off your mind, I'm tired of trying. Your teasing ain't enough. Fed up of biding your time when I don't get nothing back. When you stay